Now, welcome to another inspiring edition of Sound Insight with Dr. Tom Curran.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. This is Dr. Tom Curran. I'm with Father Jeff Lewis. Father Lewis, welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have you here.
Thank you. Good morning. It's good to be here.
It feels like a lot has happened since we were last together.
I don't know what you're talking about, but yeah.
Wow. Well, so since we last recorded, we went through Halloween, All Saints Day, All Souls Day. Something called the election.
Yeah.
And now it's we're recording this on a day, St. Didicus, a Franciscan saint. No idea who he was.
Yeah.
But it's going to air on the Feast of St. Martin of Tours. And so someone who was well known for spiritual battle, right? Mm-hmm. Fighting spiritual battles. And so so today in the program, we're going to talk a lot about that. We're going to talk about fighting the good fight of faith. All right.
Sounds good.
Back in a minute.
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Curran, the host of Sound Insight, but also a realtor serving wonderful folks like you in the state of Washington and in Idaho. I've had the privilege and pleasure of helping dozens of families in the last 2.5 years discern and find a strategy, a path, and a plan to help their families find a whole new life in eastern Washington and northern Idaho. If I could be of service to you in that, I would love to. Please reach out. DrTomCurran.com, DrTomCurran.com.
Welcome back to the program. Father Lewis is going to lead us in a scripture and a prayer.
Our scripture passage today comes from Ephesians chapter 6. Finally, draw your strength from the Lord and from his mighty power. Put on the armor of God so that you may be able to stand firm against the tactics of the devil. For our struggle is not with flesh and blood, but with the principalities, with the powers, with the world rulers of this present darkness, with the evil spirits in the heavens. Therefore, put on the armor of God, that you may be able to resist on the evil day, and, having done everything, to hold your ground. So stand fast with your loins girded in truth, clothed with righteousness as a breastplate, and your feet shod in readiness for the gospel of peace. In all circumstances, hold faith as a shield to quench all the flaming arrows of the evil one. And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. Good and gracious God, we thank you for the wisdom of St. Paul, for the holy example and the constant intercession of St. Martin of Tours, and for your blessings always upon us as we ourselves continue to run the race to the finish, to fight the good fight, that we may complete the course before us. And please, God, by your grace and mercy, enter into the fullness of your kingdom. We ask your blessings upon Tom and I today as we broadcast and upon all of our listeners as they receive what you would have them receive. All this and all your blessings we ask through Christ our Lord. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Thanks, Father Lewis. Appreciate that. So, Father, it's always a bit of a delicate thing to talk about politics on the radio. So we won't spend time talking a lot about politics, but I would love to get any sort of insight you have, even if it's like remains at a spiritual level. You can land the plane at whatever level of grounding you want. But what are some reflections that you take away now that we're a couple of days out, and when we're recording this, from the election? What were a couple of big things that showed up for you in the run up to the election, the election day itself, and then things that sort of overflowed after that?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to say about, the feeling in the country, right? The feeling around united versus divided, being at extremes versus being together, right? Mm-hmm. Common cause versus conflict and separation.
Yeah.
What are some things that jumped out at you?
Well, daring not to dive too much into politics, especially me being an official agent of the church. But one thing that just had me increasingly, I guess, concerned leading up to Election Day is the rhetoric of one of the candidates that was just more and more needlessly, even monstrously divisive. You know, for all the talk and hope of unity and joy, those just became, it seemed to me, fluff words, because the rhetoric kept on being that this other candidate is Hitler and you fans of him are Nazis. And then the word garbage was actually flung at us, and or flung at you know, Trump supporters and so on. And well, for anybody who wasn't automatically on the band, on the jumping on the bandwagon with Harris, I guess. And so, I mean, it just seemed empty rhetoric. And, you know, and meanwhile, you know, I think the polls show and the exit polls show that Trump was trying to run a campaign and apparently succeeded at truly being uniting. He kept on talking about a huge tent, and just look at who was on the stage with him, RFK. I never would have imagined that even 10 months ago, let alone, you know, now. But Elon Musk, these kinds of people, it's like there's a lot of very differing personalities.
Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah, right? Tulsi Gabbard.
Democrat.
Yeah, and Nikki Haley, who was the most ferocious of Trump's opponents in the Republican primaries, in many ways. But they're all, you know, and then you look at the polls that, you know, Trump was able to increase gains as a Republican candidate from all of the major demographics, the Hispanics, the Jews, the Muslims, the Catholic vote. It seemed like just everyone. And so anyway, you know, which one is talking the talk and which one's actually walking the walk? So that was one takeaway I had kind of leading into it. And then post that, you know, the temptation I suspect always is the day after the election, the side that won to gloat, and the side that won, that lost to cry out in horror, and or whatever. The we got to fight that temptation, whichever side you're on, because, you know, I think the fact of the matter is I've never known in my relatively short life, and certainly short life as an electing voting citizen, such a divided nation and a divided culture. And are we going to let this keep happening, or are we going to use the opportunity before us? And always the opportunity is before us. I mean, the last election, the opportunity is before us. How are we going to just be agents of peace, reconciliation, and not just false, fake surface union, but actual heart-to-heart unity? Because at the end of the day, we're not enemies of one another. The enemies are the principalities and powers of this world, Satan and his minions. And the more that we make enemies of each other, the more he just gloats and realizes that his evil work is being done for him. So we've got to try to find a way to unite and just keep moving forward for the progress of all peoples, which is an aspect of the Christian mission anyway. Our progress is toward heaven, trying to cooperate with God's grace to bring the goodness of heaven here on this earth while we have a chance for the salvation of souls.
So you're quoting here from where we began, which is Ephesians 6, and it's put on the armor of God that you may stand firm against the tactics of the devil, right? And I would say that if we look at the scriptures, the very first tactic of the devil was propaganda, right? Mm-hmm. And it was a twisting. It was a deceptive presentation of what was real, and it was an attempt to establish that fictitious reality in the mind of Eve, so that here's the tree. This tree has fruit on it that appears good, but it is off limits. Don't trespass. Don't go near that tree. Pull that fruit and take a bite from it. Eating of that tree is, in fact, the opposite of what you've been told it is. You've been told that it's the knowledge of the tree of good and evil, and it is that, but the outcome is different. In fact, let me twist it. Let me give you a different reality that, in fact, it'll make you like God rather than unlike God. So don't obey God, because you become a threat if you eat that fruit. And so it was the clever, seductive use of propaganda, of language, to twist what was real.
Right.
And so if you present something just like purely what it is and let the people decide, right? Like think of commercials from 50 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. It was 80 years ago. I can't even say 50 years ago now. That's how old I am. Let's go back 80 years ago, and those black and white commercials, which were, here are the facts, and now you decide. Instead, it's no, let me twist it and create this whole experience around a false presentation of what's real. You might just get seduced and buy into it.
Right.
And I don't know if I saw a clearer example of that than in the presentation of abortion as somehow being all about defending women and their fundamental human rights. It was such demonic propaganda is what it is. That's for me just an example of that's your lead issue. That's what you're leading with. And putting that forward and washing over, you don't say, let's take a close look at the reality of what's going on here. Mm-hmm. But rather, let's use an entry point that is deceptive, that's clever, that's seductive, that who can say no to that? And yet through that doorway, lead them into an action that is ultimately destructive of human life, of their lives, destructive in 100 different ways. And yet it's fundamentally based on propaganda that is out there for everyone to see.
Right. Well, and the propaganda clearly has been working. I was just talking with some folks looking at the election results state by state where abortion was on the ballot. And it just blows my mind that places where you have, you know, conservative folks and conservative leaders and politicians like Kansas and now like Montana, that will at the same time seem to overwhelmingly approve of these pro-abortion measures, even in their state constitutions. I don't understand where that comes from, except that people must have been seduced by the lie that this is about the safety of women. And if you don't let women have access to abortion, then they'll die giving a miscarriage, whatever else they're going to say. And that's just, as you say, just monstrous. And I would like to know, you know, there were some states on the election day that I guess there were three of them. I only knew of one, Florida, that defeated it.
Yeah, and Nebraska and South Dakota.
Okay, good. Okay. I would like the pro-life cause to take a good hard look at what those three states did to defend life and to defeat those measures and to mimic those tactics, because whatever they did worked and it didn't work elsewhere. So the fight still goes. I wonder how many people figured that the fight was won when Roe v. Wade was overturned, and all that did was like decentralize the enemy. So now instead of at the federal level, it's each state. Okay, so it's a step in the right direction, but it's only a step in the right direction. And we're saying maybe we just got too relaxed on our laurels and resting too much, thinking that the fight was done. I think it just is intensified because it's much more local now. But in any event, you're right. You know, the sweet innocent lie is the little snowball that began the avalanche, and it's happening again at the state levels.
And one of the things that I've seen in the last handful of years, I don't remember when I first saw it, is that there are those who are so pro-abortion, right? They're not pro-choice, they're pro-abortion, that like leading voices will actually say, okay, fine, we'll acknowledge that that's a baby in the womb of the mother. So what?
Yeah.
So what? If that baby's life is going to be destroyed because of the mother's choice, I still defend the woman's right to destroy that baby's life in the womb. Now what?
Yeah.
Right. So now all of a sudden, like the mask has been removed.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that it's very difficult to imagine that people begin there,
yeah,
that they begin with that kind of attitude towards human life. Mm-hmm. It's something that gets sunk into their bones,
yeah,
over time. Like if we embrace an evil, that evil begins to like absorb like a virus,
yeah,
into our lives. And all of a sudden now we begin to compromise at deeper and deeper levels. And even to the extent that we'll acknowledge that, yeah, that's an evil, but I still am going to pursue it, promote it, embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the one where there's the most at stake is abortion. But there are certainly others as well. So many other moral issues of the time follow suit.
Yeah.
I would say, like, in the lives of men, it's probably pornography is one where the guy probably has started with, yeah, this is wrong, I shouldn't do it, then ends up and says, well, right or wrong isn't even on my radar screen anymore. It's just something that I'm choosing to do, or I'm embracing it, or right. I don't know. Maybe that's not the best way of saying it.
Sure.
Did you want anything you want to say about that? I've got several other issues that are kind of fall into that same camp.
Well, I was just, gone are the days of what the, you know, what the pro-choice people said in the 70s of safe, rare, and legal. Now it's got to be safe or unsafe. Who cares? It needs to be there. And rare, no, we want it as common as can be, and legal, not only legal, but mandated and celebrated and enshrined as some kind of secular sacrament. And, what happened to those days is just, it's appalling to me that it's come to this. And I agree with you. You know, you could point out, I was talking with a parishioner earlier this week. You know, the problem is that they don't see the baby, as a human. I said, I think they do. I think they absolutely do, because ultrasounds have proven it. What they will argue, and what we need to argue, is they don't see it as a human person and a person worthy of legal rights. And now the argument is starting to sound to me very suspiciously and disconcertingly like the argument against slavery and for slavery back in the 1800s. You know, the whole Missouri Compromise, where a black person is only 3/5 of a person, you know, the whole 3/5 compromise kind of a thing. And, you know, we had to fight the same fight then that, you know, the white man's right to property was more important than the black man's right to liberty. But that's incorrect. You know, it's life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness or property in that order for a reason. And we're still having to fight the same fallacious argument that there's those people saying, well, the woman's right to choose, her freedom, is more important than the baby's right to life. That needs to be flip-flopped. I've said, and even in a couple of homilies, I said, I hope that this time it's the same kind of argument. Hopefully this time it won't take a civil war and constitutional amendments to correct it. You know, hopefully reason will prevail. And but we'll see. But I do believe that's where the fight is. Let's try to define carefully the legal right to personhood of the unborn child, the preborn. And I'd like to see some lawyers try to take up that argument and pursue it.
Yeah. That's Father Jeff Lewis. This is Tom Karn. We're up against a break. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about this spiritual battle that we're in. Even though we're talking about right now political, legal issues, they can be traced back to a spiritual vision of who we are as human beings and a spiritual battle component of that reality. Back in a minute.
Hi, this is Dr. Tom Curran, and you know me as the host of Sound Insight. I am also letting folks know that as a realtor licensed in the state of Washington and in Idaho, I love serving Catholic families and others who are discerning a move for yourselves. It's much more than buying or selling a home. It's discerning a whole new life. If that's something that you would find a help in, if I could be of service to you, please be in touch. You can find out more at drtomcurran.com, drtomcurran.com.
Welcome back to the program. So, Father Lewis, we're talking about political matters. We're talking about voting. We're talking about social issues. What does that have to do with the demonic and spiritual warfare? Aren't those two like radically separate?
No, I don't think so. You know, They are very related, because
wasn't that a softball of a question?
It totally was.
That was like, come on, that was way too easy.
You're absolutely right, Tom. Let's
move on to the next issue.
Move on to the topic.
Yeah,
you know, it's outward manifestations of what more deeply and spiritually is going on. You know, I was talking with one of my parishioners. What's before us? You know, how's this election going to play out in the spiritual lives of many? Is it going to be perceived, the outcomes, as a mercy given to us, or as like some kind of instance of wrath and judgment? And how are we going to respond if we perceive it as the outcome is merciful to us? We got our way, so to speak. Okay, how are you going to respond? Are we going to try to turn around and be now agents of mercy to others and keep that going, to try to let God continue to extend that mercy and peace and joy and all those good things to others? But if we didn't get our way and we see it as, oh, great, the wrath is upon us, how are we going to respond? Are we going to respond wrath with wrath? Or are we going to see, okay, you know, how did the saints of old handle such cultural contexts. You know, they saw themselves as in the thick of it, and this is, for whatever reason, the time God has chosen me to live in this time, and how am I going to respond for the salvation of my soul? That's the bottom line, is all these things, they're secondary concerns. The primary concern is, how does this cultural context or that, how does this external prompt or that, how does it encourage me or attempt me to respond? And will I respond in a way that takes me a step closer to sainthood and salvation, or further away? And that's what's most important. So all these things are pathways for us and opportunities for us to grow in holiness or to not grow in holiness. And so, you know, how are we going to respond to the external factors that in a way that will inform our internal development in faith?
So I'm going to tie this into today's feast day, right? So you began with the scripture of Ephesians chapter 6, where our struggle is not with flesh and blood alone, but principally with, primarily with the principalities and powers, with the world rulers of this present darkness. We think of world rulers of this present darkness as, oh yeah, this king and that emperor and that prime minister and that president. Mm-hmm. No, the world rulers of this present darkness, evil spirits in the heavens. Yeah. And therefore, put on the armor of God that you may be able to resist on the evil day, and having done everything, hold your ground, right? It's like, wait a minute, I'm just enjoying life here. Things seem to be pretty good. I don't feel like, you know, there are flaming stones being hurled at my house, right? Over battlements. And I've got on armor, you know, like think of Gladiator,
right?
Or other.
Or Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. Right? That kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we've been talking about battles against ideas that have consequences that are life and death, like you've been mentioning. And yet we have this, like, Tours. We've got St. Martin of Tours. Mm-hmm. We've got the Battle of Tours, mm-hmm. right? Charles Martel, you know, pushing back the Moors, mm-hmm. the Muslims, mm-hmm. and, you know, separated by a few hundred years. And then we also have something else that happened in Tours last century, which is the Holy Face devotion.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like that's a third reality in this whole battle. So it feels like that there's spiritual meanings to even locations like Tours. Mm-hmm. So anything you want to mention about St. Martin of Tours, or even just like I mentioned the Battle of Tours and stuff like that. I know you love history and apologetics and stuff. So anything jumping out at you about the reality of St. Martin of Tours?
Yeah. Well, kind of a quick step back, you know, the physical circumstances of our lived reality are, you know, factors into what the spiritual battle is alike, and how do we perceive that? I think if we have a sacramental worldview, if we see the world through the lens of faith and spirituality, because we walk by faith, not by sight, then we're not just frightened at every potential shadow and demon in the corners, but we have a sober reality that all these things are indicative of the greater realities of the spirit. So saying that, Saint Martin seem to have lived his life that way, because what's one of the great stories about him is that he encountered a homeless beggar or something on the side of the road, shivering in the cold. And he took his military cloak and ripped it in half so that he would have half to keep himself warm. And then he had the other half to keep him warm. And then he went on his way, and he had a dream that night of Jesus wearing that torn half of the military cloak. And so he had the experience and the vision that what you did for the least of my brothers, you did for me. Now, St. Martin, I think that was even before he became Christian. I think he was a catechumen at that point, but that sealed the deal, and he was going to get baptized and then went on to be a bishop and so on. But it began with that. There was something in him, a kernel of a seed of being able to see the world through a sacramental lens, that it's just the right and just to do what I can for this person. And in helping this person, I'm helping Christ. And then he actually had that confirmed for him, you know, later in dream. So he's shown for us, if we approach the world around us in a sober way, not looking for demons, but in a way that has a worldview of looking at the spiritual through the physical, how much my life has changed because of that. I'm seeing people in the deeper reality of, this is a child of God too. Even if right now they disagree with me and I'm tempted to make them my personal enemy, This is a beloved child of God too. I need to respond and react accordingly.
So, Father, you're talking about this like realm of the demonic and spiritual warfare and how it can impact our lives if we have that sacramental worldview. In our tradition, and I want to explore this with you, there's like three sources that will come against us that the devil can use, right? So there's the world, the flesh, and the devil.
Yeah.
And so if we have the eyes of faith and we have that sacramental worldview, which means that the physical world is somehow influenced by, related to, and can be a conduit for the invisible or spiritual realm, right? That's a way of defining the sacramental mm-hmm. worldview. It's not just God
right.
that is involved in that type of connectivity with the events and realities of this earth, but so also the fallen angels, the realm of the demonic. I like to, again, you've heard me say this. I prefer to say that than just the devil, because it tends to focus on one.
Right.
Rather than, no, wait a minute, there are millions or billions of demons.
They're legion.
Legion, right. And that they are, there's this realm of the demonic that is coming against us, and we ought to be aware of that.
Yeah.
And so we take actions associated with that. So let's start with the world, the flesh, and the devil as these three different entry points for the demonic to come into our lives. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to start? And just talk a bit about how we as Catholics ought to be paying attention to like this source or this source. And what do we do to fight the battle in an Ephesians 6 sort of way?
Mm-hmm. Well, first, the fourth voice being God. And so we can categorize him as God or not God. And ultimately, we need to discern how we're going to find out which is the voice of God. So the world, the flesh, and the devil, I would say that the devil objectively is the worst of those three, but the point is that all three of those are not God, and that's the ultimate goal, to find out what is God's voice and what is God's will for me. Maybe where to begin, okay, having said that, maybe where to begin of those three non-God voices, maybe is the flesh. I start there because, In the book, there's a great book, told sidebar for really quick. There's a great book on kind of leadership development called Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Not a Christian book, but a leader kind of self-improvement book. And one of the things they talks about in there is identifying your circle of control, circle of influence, and circle of concern. Meaning, where are you going to spend your energy when there's something going on that you perceive needs fixing? Well, you can't control what's happening in Southeast Asia. I can't control you, and you're right across the table from me. I can only control myself and how I'm going to respond to external stimuli. So that's why maybe starting with the flesh is the place to begin, because if I can, with the help of God's grace, gain better control over my own wants and perceived desires and so on, that would be one battle easily contained, and then we can level up to the next enemy. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think?
Seems
a prudent approach.
No, that's great. So John of the Cross talks about these three,
mm-hmm.
and he says, of the three, which one is most vehement and the one that is most constant? It's the flesh.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, isn't the flesh what is going to the devil like pokes at the flesh,
mm-hmm.
right? So when I think about the flesh as a source of spiritual warfare, I make a distinction between what I would call ordinary temptations that are associated with like different dimensions of the flesh, and let's call it demonically inspired or demonically influenced fleshly temptations.
Mm-hmm.
Of the various forms of demonic influence, harassment is one that I think is no, it's no, sorry. I want to talk about oppression. Rather than harassment, we'll talk about harassment as direct spiritual warfare, but that idea of being oppressed, like oppressive temptations, I'm surprised. Should I really be surprised that I listen to some people talk about their experience of being tempted, and I'm thinking, I don't think that's just ordinary temptations that you're experiencing.
Yeah,
it feels like you are the intensity and extent of these temptations just seem to be far more than ordinary. It seems weird. Mm-hmm. That's the word I like to use. It's like a weirdness to it.
Yeah.
And for me, that's a matter of saying, can you see the hand of the demonic here? Like taking advantage of a weak point, like a vulnerable spot in your life to get you to abandon your faith, to you know, I'm out of control. Yeah. There's nothing I can do about it, right? Mm-hmm. And yet, no, wait a minute. I do have the ability to turn to the Lord in that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's an exact relevant point to control versus concern versus influence and concern.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts about that?
I agree. And, you know, I suppose in secular speak, we might say it's gone beyond just a temptation or a habit to like addiction. You know, mm-hmm. they are so, I wonder what the, you know, we can talk about, you know, in terms of level of preternatural attacks, obsession versus oppression, but mm-hmm. certainly you're at least mentally, psychologically obsessed with whatever it is, you know? And what I think particularly is cell phones and social media. It's still an aspect of the flesh craving something, and probably physically it is because of dopamine hits and so on in the brain. But I was talking with one of our youth group kids last night, and she had mentioned, I don't have my phone with me. And I kind of teased that a little bit, like, aren't you like, you know, shaking and itching? And I mean, aren't you like, and God bless her. She said, nah. I'm like, oh, maybe it hasn't really gripped you yet. Because some people it has, like if they haven't checked their Facebook in an hour, if they haven't checked their Twitter in a day, then it's a plague on their mind. They can't stop, even if they're doing something else, they can't stop thinking about it, and they want to get back to that. They're obsessed with it, right?
So I'll make this distinction, and then I want you to run with it. All right, so oppression versus obsession. So when I think of oppression, I think of the experience where, okay, I'm in conflict with Kerry.
Mm.
I'm in conflict. Did you like that?
Uh-huh.
I'm having an argument.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, there is this intensity around resisting her position and a kind of anger that is even like tinged with hatred that has like no part in my authentic relationship with her, but has been stirred up, teed up, and is coming through the doorway of the temptation to say, I'm right, you're wrong, and I resist what you're saying, and I hate you for it. Wait, what just happened there?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, wow, that's oppression.
Yeah.
That is not Tom.
Yeah.
That there's no place. So one of the things that Kerry and I will do is we'll say, okay, if we're ever in a fight, let's make sure that we're paying attention to the way that the devil or the demonic might step into that and amplify and intensify the negativity of the communication to try to get in there and make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And if we recognize it, to immediately just acknowledge that out loud, as hard as that is, to break that pattern and just to say, okay, let's just stop, please. I got to humbly say to someone, I just feel like you're under spiritual attack.
Yeah. Put on her, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, wait a minute. I think we are under spiritual attack right now. This is more than just us disagreeing about something.
Yeah.
There's something that is weird. There's that weirdness again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's intensifying and extending in a way that's just, this is not right.
Yeah.
So even if it's just, let's just go to our corners and just breathe and pray and surrender to the Lord and give ourselves some time. And then we can come back to this.
That's right.
So that for me would be an example of oppression.
I think that sounds right. It you know, where we come to the conclusion, well, that escalated quickly. You hear that phrase sometime.
Yeah.
And like, I did not want this or will this. And it wasn't by my own, imagining or desire to have it go this way, this quickly. It just, we're suddenly there. So like an outside force has exerted itself to push you further in that direction. And what are some examples of that? You know, one guy takes a glance at a pornographic image and suddenly 5 hours have gone by and he's still doing it. And he's like, where did the time go? Or you're just going to have a piece of cake before you know half the cake or more is gone. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're like, whoa, that escalated quickly. You know, so you can see how I can see your distinction there and how that may actually be demonstrated in the lived realities of people. Like where you just, how did it end up here? And where did the time go? And how, I didn't choose this, yet it went there anyway. Yeah, it's weird that something's didn't just prompt me in that direction, but like propelled me forward in that direction. And that wasn't my plan or expectation at all.
And so, brothers and sisters, we're coming up against a break, but before we get there, just remember, like, this is the Feast of St. Martin of Tours. He was someone who fought spiritual battles as a monk and then as a bishop of Tours, France. And Tours has become a place of spiritual battle. And I think that that's a great theme to talk about today. So we are on the program. So we just talked a bit about oppression. And we encourage you that if you ever find yourself or a loved one or a situation in your life where there is this intensification, this weirdness, this extent of temptations that are coming against you, turn to the Lord, cry out to him, surrender to him, call upon the Blessed Mother for grace, to intercession, call upon your guardian angel to be with you, to protect you, and to lead you through. When we come back, we're going to talk about obsession. And if there's anything else you want to say in terms of like a spiritual remedy for oppression, please, Father, you'll have a chance to do that as well. Back in a minute. Welcome back to the program. This is Tom Karen with Father Jeff Lewis. So Father Lewis, we're talking about a really pleasant, light topic today, which is actually fitting in November as we head towards the reflection on the last things, yeah. Right? The death, judgment, heaven, and hell, as we approach the end of the liturgical year. We're talking about spiritual warfare and on the feast of St. Martin of Tours. It's very fitting to do that. We talked about oppression. Any final words you want to say about oppression, or should we move right further into obsession that you were talking about?
Well, some just last additional words that apply to all three levels of these kind of more intensified spiritual attacks of obsession, oppression, and possession is, first of all, I'm not our diocesan exorcist. I'm not the expert in this field, but one ought not be overly fascinated with this is the first lesson that he would give. But then also, what are the normal remedies for these things? You got to get to prayer, pray each day. You've got to be participating in the sacraments, get your sacramental life in order, regularly participating in the life of the church. These are the ordinary means of dealing with these attacks. And then, get your home blessed, get sacramentals presented to a priest or a clergy to get blessed and make use of those things. There's nothing magical about overcoming this. Christ has already given us the tools to overcome this. We call those things prayer and sacraments. And the church, in her abundant wisdom, has given us abundant access to these things and abundant resources. So I would just say, before we continue, just to emphasize that, don't call the exorcist right away. I heard Tom Curran and Father Lewis on the radio, and I think I'm possessed. Don't do that. Don't call your bishop or your exorcist and say that. They're going to tell you if they know what they're doing. Are you praying? Are you baptized? Are you going to confession? Have you gone to Mass? If not, why not? Start there.
Right. Yeah. That's the sort of the ordinary expectation around things. And there's a lot more to say about that. I don't know if we'll have time today to get further into that. Let's talk about obsession.
There we go.
I'm obsessed with obsession. So there's a way in which you mentioned addiction, right? There's that idea of spiritual bondage. That's a different way of understanding addiction. When we think addiction, we often think of a more secular understanding of addiction, which is I'm powerless over it and I'm not really morally responsible for it, right? It's something that is a genetic inclination or it's a biochemical thing that happens in my brain. I'm not at fault. Mm-hmm. And I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about spiritual bondage. And that's where there is a sense of powerlessness, and that's associated with the will.
Yeah.
And I gotta tell you, I experienced this is a non-demonic level of obsession with candy.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
And we just had Halloween, Dom.
Well, that's why. So here's the thing. So I went on the Camino, right? And I was fasting and penance and all this other great stuff and no candy. No way. No bread, no sugar, right? Healthy eating, fasting. Let's go. And then I come back and doing great. Like first several weeks, no candy, no chocolate, no any of this. And then the dam burst. Halloween comes around and all of a sudden we've got this big bowl of candy and my kids have the big pillowcase full of candy and it's their fault. It's my kids' fault. And all of a sudden I'm like, I eat some candy and I say to myself, this is terrible. Why am I doing this? As I'm breaking open another Kit Kat. I refuse to have any more candy as I'm looking around for it in the house, and I become obsessed with finding it.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, where is that candy? Where is that candy? I'm like, I hate that I'm doing this. I'm working out. I'm still eating healthy, and all that's going great. But candy has just been, okay, that's a strong word, obsession. But here's the actual lived experience. I'm sitting there saying, I won't do it. I won't do it. I won't do it. Oh, there's the bucket of it. I'm not going to get it. I hate myself when I do it. Remember how badly you felt as you ate it last time, as I took out, you know, 2 Reese's and 3 Kit Kats, and I sit them down next to me as I go back to work. And I'm thinking, why would I do that? I'm going to hate myself for doing it. I'm not going to do it, as I'm tearing it open and as I'm eating them all. And then I just surrender and just say, well, let me enjoy it.
Yeah. And at least it's only these 5 pieces.
It could have been worse.
Right.
It could have been a lot worse.
So you start to justify it.
And then, well, let me go work out again, because that'll take care of it. And that's an example of obsession. It has to do with the disconnect between the knowledge, the reason, and the will.
Yeah.
And the incapacity to will what I know is good and true and right. And that's that sense of being in bondage or having such a weakened will that I just give way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's not that much at stake in eating some candy, but that's an example.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Not to go to confession. Is that?
No, a key word that you used earlier to distinguish oppression from obsession is that's just weird. And I think a lot of listeners, including myself here in this conversation with you, say, we can find ways to justify it. Well, it's Halloween. You were without candy for a while. You maybe have a sweet tooth. It all adds up. It's, give yourself a break. Might be, a break of that Kit Kat bar. There you go. we might sympathize with you and help you to just be, at ease, And so for me, this last week was not that, but it was the internet. Because of the election,
watching videos on this report and that report.
Yeah, I want to see
who's winning here.
Exactly, how are the polls turning out? How are the electorals turning out? And here's how the extreme it went with me. I have a rule for myself that, as much as I can, except for emails if I need to, when noon hits, I'm done with the internet for the day. It can wait till the next day. Well, on election day, I was still updating, refresh, pushing that button till like 10:30 at night. I said, I try to go to bed at 9 because I have an early mass the next morning. I try to get up at 5. I'm going to be wasted and useless in the morning. Oh, well, refresh. Yep. If I said, that's it, I'm done. But what happened was my phone gave me an alert. I don't have unlimited data on my plan. It gave me an alert that I overused my data. I've been charged $15 for the overage. I'm like, no, this obsession has cost me money. Mm-hmm. And that's what made me that's what made me put the phone down. It's like, I don't want this to cost me money.
Yep.
So now I'm out an extra $15 on my next phone bill because of that obsession, right?
Yes. So there were impacts, mm-hmm. right? So same thing for us around, I'm going to bed later at night. I've gone to bed later at night the past week. Now I had created a structure of life where I was getting up very early in the morning to get in an hour of prayer before I went to the gym for an hour and then go to mass first thing in the morning. So I could, trying to get onto that calendar or, get back home and I'm working at 7:30 in the morning and I've already gotten in an hour of prayer and an hour of working out and I've had a healthy breakfast and I'm launching into my day. You know how many times I've done that in the last week? Like 0.
Oh, I was going to guess 1. I was going to be sympathetic.
No, none.
None at all.
You know what? It would be like, oh, well, I still prayed, but I didn't start that early. Or I worked out, but it wasn't that long.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, it's amazing how an obsession can disrupt what is intentional in our lives of faith. There's a lot at stake. More than $15, it's how about my peace of soul?
Mm-hmm.
How about my discernment about what God wants from me? How about fulfilling the duties of my state in life? There are some like big deal things that get impacted if I'm not attentive to things that we can start obsessing over.
Yeah.
And so I said peace was the first one, right? We get obsessed with watching, the latest report or latest statistic or the latest whatever. or whether it's food, or whether it's, again, whether it's even just the dopamine hits that come from looking at videos or listening to podcasts or whatever, those things objectively may not be bad, but they're having bad effects on us.
Right.
And that's worth paying attention to.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And they can be, they're not bad, but they can have bad effects on us. And if unchecked, it can just snowball from there. You know, oh, that wasn't so bad. How about this? And then how about this? You know, whatever this is. But we, and again, I think a lot of it, this might be the, you know, me, the external, the election day activities were maybe the world tempting me, but my flesh engaged in that by wanting the dopamine hit or wanting that information. And now I'm excusing myself, like, well, that wasn't so bad. Now was it? It was only $15 of overage fees or whatever. And so now, who knows, it might lead me to more of that, or more of the same, but just more of it, or something worse, you know? So left unchecked, it can easily snowball into that. So that's why I keep using that word snowball, but imagine a snowball at the top of the mountain. If you just stopped it, then you prevented an avalanche that happened at the bottom of the mountain. Mm-hmm. But left unchecked, it's going to tumble down and result in this avalanche. And now we can't even control it. It's beyond our influence. It's a level of concern. I am plummeting, and God help me. Mm-hmm. Peter sinking into the water. Lord, save me. You know, he was out of control anymore at that point. And God will save us, hopefully, you know, in a way that we will perceive we ever saved, in a way that we need, that we think we need. But the point is that it would have been a lot easier to cooperate with God's grace in the beginning of all that avalanche than at the end.
Yeah, we'll get to break. And I want to pick up on this point when we come back, because every once in a while, I'll kind of come to this awareness, like, Lord, I don't want you spending your grace rescuing me, right? Like, if you're going to pour grace into my life, I want it to be to strengthen me to accomplish my mission, not to rescue me from being a knucklehead, right? So, but we're up against a break, Father. When we come back, more of the program. Welcome back to the program. So, Father Lewis, here we are. And I'm talking about being a knucklehead and how I don't want the Lord to be spending his time. No, this is very anthropomorphic. I don't want the Lord spending his time and grace rescuing me from being a knucklehead with the, you know, the avalanche, the snowball going all the way down to the bottom of the hill. I want my life to be spent on the purposes for which the Lord has created me, right? I want to be fulfilling his mission in my life. And so I, when you were sharing about this reality of obsession and getting free from it, I had this idea in my mind, and I've lost it right now. It's like, okay, I'm forgetting it. And it was a principle that I've used to help me deal with like disrupting the obsession, obsessive types of things. And one of them is that having, like, you don't have to make a choice every day to say, I'm going to, when am I going to pray today? No, just you build a daily routine.
Yeah. That's a foundation, awesome. Right?
Right. So it's, I don't think anymore. I've already done the thinking. And so now let me just live what my thought is and let me pray at the beginning of the day. Okay. So I'm just going to set my alarm. I'm going to get up. It just becomes harder when we disrupt that routine and we have those downstream effects where if we're up late at night, it just becomes that much harder to get up early in the morning, right, and have that prayer time.
Right.
So I think having a daily routine is a very valuable way to help overcome the weakness of will.
Yeah.
Is that you've put your will into the routine.
Right. I agree. I think, you know, we speak of ourselves oftentimes as creatures of habit, right down to where we sit at mass. It's always, you know, don't you sit in my spot in the pew. Now, God help you if your parish is growing and now people are sitting in your pew. But all that is a joking way of saying, yes, we are creatures of habit. And if we just settle into routine, how much easier it is for us to be settled and then be opened to graces to be received. Whereas if that initial step is constantly in flux, we're just thrown off our stability here, and it's taking us longer to enter into a position where we can receive. So I believe God created us created us that way on purpose and for that reason. And so, yeah, let's just roll with it. You know, if you set up a routine, tweak it as you go to make sure that it's still bearing the fruits that you hope for and is actually being efficacious, but abide by the routine nonetheless, once you've got it established.
Well, let's finish by talking about the direct spiritual attacks, right? So that's the realm of the demonic, and that's going to be fought directly, right? So I'm not saying you're going to have the demon appear in your room, right, and have all of that, but I would say that there's definitely on the rise a sense of people promoting things like Satanism and the occult and occult practices, you know, movies and shows that are positively promoting, like interacting with the demonic.
Yeah.
Is that too strong?
No, I absolutely, I'm just looking at what movies are produced. There seems to be more and more this influx of grotesque, horrifying, bloody horror films. That they used to be like, you had Nightmare on Elm Street, and that, like, that was the thing that summer. Okay, we got that out of our system. Now there's like 10 a month. And it's like, how do sick people come up with these things? And the sick people that go and are entertained by these things, and then we're numb to these things. And now when real spiritual attacks prompted by that, maybe, or opening our minds to that, happen, we don't even notice because we're so desensitized to it by then. But yeah, I see it. I see it just looking at the movies that come out, the TV shows that come out, the pop culture elements that not just say, well, it's no big deal, but in fact, celebrate it. How many movies are coming out where the protagonist is the villain? There's three Venom movies out. Venom was an enemy of Spider-Man, the hero. And there's three where he's the protagonist and the sympathetic, you know, we feel for him, protagonist. No, he was the bad guy. You know, Hannibal Lecter is never the good guy. Don't try to make him a sympathetic figure. He's the bad guy. Darth Vader is the bad guy, you know? So,
hey, whoa. Yeah. There are limits. There are limits. Darth Vader is the bad guy?
Well, I mean,
no, I'm teasing.
I know how the Return of the Jedi ends, but, you know, so he's redeemed.
He's redeemed.
That's different. That's different, yes. Right?
That's right.
But in any event, so yeah, your question, do you see this? I see it, and it concerns me. It's becoming more normative, and we're just, you know, it's entertainment at, you know, at its worst, it's cheap entertainment. But it opens doors. That's the danger. We don't perceive that danger because it's just entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and this is where I would say, like, learning from the saints, that where there are specific things we can do as well to fight against the demonic. And so I think of fasting and other acts of penance are very directly used and referenced in the scriptures to be powerful ways that we are letting God come in to fight our battles and to fight our battles against demonic sources. And so, look, for no other reason, guys, I'm going to talk to guys out there. If you have a role of leading and providing and protecting your family, you should be fasting.
Yeah.
You should be doing acts of self-denial on a even maybe daily basis. Look for a way to pick up your cross. Was scriptures yesterday about the mass, right? It was about unless you die to yourself, pick up your cross and follow me, you're going to have no part of me.
Yeah.
And that's part of the battle. And part of the reason why we do that is because we're in a spiritual battle.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Anything you want to say about that, Father?
Well, it's absolutely.
You've got 2 minutes left.
2 minutes. So, yeah. Oh, okay. I was cautious to weigh in because I thought we had like 20 seconds left, but spiritual battle. And you notice what you said there, Tom, you know, we can be focused on the Hollywoods and the music industry putting out all these things. And again, control, influence, concern. Those are circles of concern. I can't control them. I can't even influence them. I can't influence people around me. Like, maybe be a little more cautious about what we choose to let into our minds and into our bodies and into our souls. And I can certainly control me. And that's what you're describing. You can control what you're going to do so that you can be strengthened in this area. And then through that strengthening, you can have some good positive influence on those around you, fathers of families and parents of their children and so on. But yes, it's got to begin with me. You can't just expect a magic trick or someone else to take it for me. I've got to accept the hard choice and the cross and personally embrace it so that I can personally receive those graces. And then through that, maybe share it with others, but it's got to begin with me. Right.
Well, and Father, just to finish up then in the last minute, it's really about, we begin with the theme of propaganda, presenting lies as if they're true, a false, fictitious vision of reality that has damaging effects. Living in the light of the truth of our faith, living in fellowship with others who are walking in that path are going to give us strength to recognize the battle we're in, as well as the means of fighting against it. And so really, truly, brothers and sisters, just be careful about the sources that you're allowing to shape your mind and heart, disturbing your peace, confusing your mind, versus taking that helmet of salvation, taking that, the shield of faith to be able to fight against these enemies. You can do it together so that you're not just caught up in situations that are going to ruin your peace and actually open you to demonic confusion. So, well, Father, thanks so much for being with me today. Really appreciate it. God bless you all. Join me tomorrow for more of the program.